Pleasure as always. In this week's parsha, Parshas Vayera, the beginning, the first pasuk in the parsha, the Torah tells us, "Vayedaber Elokim lo Moshe, Vayomer Elav Ani Hashem." Elokim speaks to Moshe Rabbeinu and tells him, "I am Hashem." So immediately, obviously, the question begs itself: why does the pasuk change in language? Vayedaber Elokim lo Moshe, Lashon Dibur, the shame of Hashem, referred to as Elokim. And Vayomer Lashon Amira, Elav Ani Hashem, I am Hashem. This question is bothered by it, the Mefarshim are bothered by it, and going all the way back to Chazal, the Medrash Rabbah in the beginning of this parsha is bothered by this question. So the Medrash says, I'm just going to read you the beginning. Vayedaber Elokim el Moshe, Vayomer Elav Ani Hashem, Hadohu Dichsiv. This pasuk, this story that we're reading about here in the beginning of Parshas Vayera, really captures an idea that Shlomo HaMelech taught us in a pasuk in Koheles. Pasuk says, "Ufanisi ani liros chachma." I turned myself to investigate, to study wisdom, the holus, the sichlus. The article translates as madness and folly. Kimaha adam shiyavo achrei amelech es asher k'varasu. What is man to come and second guess, so to speak, that which God has done? So the Medrash says this pasuk in Koheles refers to two people. It refers to Moshe Rabbeinu and it refers to Shlomo HaMelech. Why is it referred to Moshe Rabbeinu? Where do we find Moshe Rabbeinu, so to speak, second-guessing God? So this Rashi already tells at the end of last week's Parsha, and quoted here in the Medrash. Moshe Rabbeinu comes and speaks to Paro, says, we have to leave, we have to serve God in the desert. And Paro says, what are you doing, distracting the people from their work? Now, not only are you not leaving, not only are you continuing to do the same work, you're not even going to get bricks. And everybody has to make the same amount of bricks without being provided with, make the same amount of buildings without being provided with bricks. So Moshe and Aaron are leaving Paro, and they encounter a number of Jewish people who are now suffering from Paro's more stringent decrees than exist in the past, and they come with a time limit to complain to Moshe, what are you doing? Since you got here, you haven't saved us, you've only made things worse. And Moshe really takes that to heart, and he turns to God, and he says, "Umeaz basi el Paro l'dabar b'shmecha," from the time that I came to Paro and spoke, God, in your name, "Heirala amazeh." It's become worse for the Jewish people. V'hatzel lo yitzalta esamecha. Moshe Rabbeinu points an accusing finger at God and says, God, you haven't done what you said. You didn't save the Jewish people like you promised. And God responds, no, don't worry, look what's going to happen now, you'll see I'm going to save them. But Rashi points out over there that God is very upset with Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu comes to God with an accusing finger. V'hatzel lo yitzalta esamecha. You haven't saved the Jewish people as you've said. God turns to him and says, when I spoke to Avraham, and I told him, "Ki bi Yitzchak yikar lechazara," that Yitzchak is going to be the one to carry on the Jewish tradition. And then later I told him, "Ha'alei Yisham la'ola," go and sacrifice Yitzchak at the Akedah. So Avraham Avinu didn't second guess me. Avraham Avinu didn't question me. He did what I said and he had emunah. And here you, Moshe Rabbeinu, you're coming to me and you're saying, I didn't save the nation as I said. I even told you ahead of time. I told you it's going to get worse before it gets better. And now you come to me with a complaint? Not appropriate. And that's why our pasuk starts in this week's parsha. Vayedaber Elokim el Moshe. Elokim midas adin. That the Mefarshim and the Midrash point out, the midas adin wanted to be pogay in Moshe Rabbeinu. The midas adin wanted to come to Moshe Rabbeinu and harm him. But then ultimately Hashem recognized that Moshe Rabbeinu's questioning came from a place of sadness, of difficulty, of empathy, empathizing with Bnei Yisrael. Vayomer Elav Ani Hashem, Midas HaRachamim, that I see that your question is coming from a good place and not from a bad place, and therefore it's an acceptable kind of question. That's Moshe Rabbeinu. What about Shlomo HaMelech? Where do we find Shlomo HaMelech, so to speak, challenging God? So listen to what the Medrash says. Al Shlomo HaMelech Ketzad. Kishinasan HaKadosh Baruch Hu, totally Yisrael. Nasan HaMelech Mitzas Mitzvos. When Hashem gave us the Torah, He gave certain mitzvos that were just for the king. Shenemar lo yarbe lo susin. King can't have a lot of horses. King can't have a lot of money. King can't have a lot of wives. Lo yarbe lo nashim. Why? v'lo yasser levavu. If a king has a lot of wives, he might sway his heart away from Hashem. Amad Shlomo HaMelech. Comes Shlomo HaMelech. V'hechkim agzeros shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He says, I'm going to outsmart this mitzvah. I'm going to have a lot of wives, and my heart will not be swayed. And we know that ultimately that was a mistake. Reb Shimon Bar Yochai says here in the Medrash, it would have been better for Shlomo HaMelech. The Pasuk says about him that his heart was swayed from Hashem. It would be better of him to be a cleaner of the sewers, to sweep out the excrement left by all the people after they go to the bathroom, than to have this Pasuk written about him. What a grave mistake he made. Ani arba v'lo asur. I'm going to have a lot of wives, but it's not going to affect me. I'm going to be fine. What a terrible mistake. He's not the only one to make that mistake. How many people in this room, how many of us sometimes say, this mitzvah doesn't really make so much sense to me. I don't really connect to it. I don't feel it when I do this mitzvah. You know, if I understood what tzitzis was all about, maybe I'd wear them. But since I don't understand what it's all about, if I understood why tefillin was important, why shacharis was important, so obviously I'd be there. But since I don't understand, and after all, I'm me, in case you didn't notice, so I'm not going to be there. Right, we heard a great base of Musar last week. Shomer Negiah. Ooh, so many svaras that people say. It's not going to affect me. I'm going to be fine. It's okay. I need arba velo asur. How often do we tell ourselves that? The Beis Halevi says, this was the Cheid HaEgel. This was the Cheid HaEgel. One Medrash says about the Cheid HaEgel that Shlomo HaMelech himself says, Amarti Echkema V'hi Rechoka Mimeni. I understood the reasons for all the mitzvahs except for one mitzvah, the mitzvah of Parah Adumah. Another Medrash says that Parah Adumah is a kapara for the Cheid HaEgel. The purpose of the mitzvah of Parah Adumah is to atone for the sin of the Egel Azav. So the Beis Halevi asked, it seems to be a contradiction to Midrashim. On the one hand, we know the reason for Parah Adumah is to be mechaper for Cheid HaEgel. On the other hand, Shlomo HaMelech, who understood the reason for all the mitzvahs, this one he understood, he said, I don't understand. So the Beis Halevi explains a beautiful idea. He says that, how can it be that Bnei Yisrael, after experiencing 10 makos in Mitzrayim, after experiencing Kriyas Yam Suf, being there at Har Sinai, and now they're going to come and do a Avodah Zarah. They're going to make a golden calf. How's that possible? So the Beis Halevi explained that there, every mitzvah has spiritual underpinnings, Kabbalistic ideas that surround the mitzvah. And Bnei Yisrael at that time was at a high spiritual level. They were able to identify certain spiritual qualities which would enable them to serve Hashem on a higher level. Moshe Rabbeinu was at the mountain. They thought he wasn't coming back down. He was their intermediary to Hashem. They said, we need a new intermediary. We need a new context in which to serve Hashem. Ultimately, says the Beis Halevi, the Mishkan served the very purpose that they intended when they made the Egel Azav. And yet, it was a very big sin. What was the gravity of that sin? What was the difference between the Mishkan and the Egel, which was intended for the same purpose? Kasher Tziva Hashem. One was as Hashem commanded, and one was what I thought I know best. I understand. I know exactly what. I'll do it the way I want to do it. The difference between good intentions, the difference between building an egel and a mishkan, which is Kasher Tziva Hashem, is Avodah Zarah. And now we understand, says the Beis Halevi, how to reconcile the two midrashim. On the one hand, Parah Adumah is a mitzvah that even Shlomo HaMelech couldn't understand. On the other hand, it's specifically Parah Adumah, which serves as an atonement for Cheid HaEgel. Because the sin of the Egel was a sin of the intellect, it was a sin of I know best, it's a sin of I'm going to do things the way I see fit. And the Parah Adumah is a mitzvah of submitting myself to Hashem and acknowledging the fact that I don't know best. And so it atones. Why do we do it? Why is it that we pick and choose, that we explain away certain mitzvahs as not relevant, not important, not making sense, and therefore I'm exempt? Why do we do that? So I think the answer is that we have a fundamental misunderstanding of what religion is all about. What does it mean to be Jewish? So I'm just going to share with you here a paragraph or two written by Rabbi Ziegler from the Gush in his Shiurim on the Rav Sefer, The Lonely Man of Faith. He writes like this. If man views religion merely as another method for him to attain happiness, why should I be religious? It'll make me happy. And he doesn't view religion as an autonomous, transcendent, and elemental force which makes demands upon him. Then he approaches religion with the following question. What's in it for me? Religion is forced to justify and sell itself to the public. It becomes part of a larger consumer society. And he tells a story about a commercial that he used to watch as a child on Sunday morning when they were showing the cartoons. So they had commercials. So he watched the commercial. The commercial shows a clean-cut, fresh-faced, all-American family dressed in its Sunday best on the way to church. And when they come home, they sit down, the whole family together. They have a lavish meal, smiling, each one at the other, showering each other with love. What a heartwarming scene. And then the scene fades out, and across the screen comes the motto, the family that prays together stays together. Oh. What message is this conveying? Religion is like detergent. Religion is like toothpaste. You have to sell it. Make a commercial to sell the religion. Are you afraid of divorce? Go to church. You want to be happy? You want to have smiley children? Go to church. Or synagogue in our case. Try it. You'll be pleased with the results. Ooh, how nice. Now, obviously, we don't mean to downplay the value of family harmony, he writes. I'm just going to read one more paragraph. What's problematic is the what's in it for me attitude, whereby religion must prove its usefulness to the religious consumer. Man puts up a demand that religion adapt itself to his needs, and not vice versa. In a situation like this, religion loses its authenticity and its power. It waters itself down in order to attract followers. In fact, it often changes its message entirely. It tries to appeal to the public instead of teaching them. It reinforces their values instead of dictating new ones. That's what religion, consumer religion, has become. What's in it for me? If it's good for me, I'm there. If it's not good for me, if I don't like it, I'm not there. There's a medrash. Rav Pinkus quotes in Shari Mitzvah, the following medrash just captures the idea also. The medrash says, I think it's in Parshas Miketz, Paro has a dream. He's standing over the Nile. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, HaRashayim Miskayim Min Al Eloheim, Dichsevu Paro Choleim V'hu Omid Al Yehor. Paro's dreaming, he's standing on top of the Nile. The Nile is the Egyptian god, and Paro's there on top of God. Because man dictates what's important in terms of religion. Aval HaTzadikim, when it comes to Tzadikim, Elokei Miskayim Aleihem. The God of the Tzaddikim is on top of them. As the Pasuk says, V'nei Hashem Nitzav Allah. Hashem was on top of him for a time from Avram Avinu. It's such a simple idea, and so many of us so often fall into the trap of picking and choosing and justifying it, looking to what religion has to offer me, how religion can satisfy my wants and my needs. It's such a basic idea that this incomplete commitment isn't sufficient. Why doesn't it bother us? It doesn't bother me. I'm fine. Rabbi, look at me. I'm happy. Life is good. What do you want from me? So give you a mashal amad over doma. I didn't hear this mashal from Nissen Kaplan. I don't remember Nissen Kaplan's mashal, but it's inspired from a mashal I heard from him. I just adapted it to my own personal experience. Mashal amad over doma. You know why this doesn't bother us? I'll tell you. If you've ever been on the subway in New York, it's not a big schluss. But you're on the subway in New York. I was in YU for 4 years, so I had the experience many times. Sometimes you get onto the subway car, and there's a stench. There's a stench coming from somewhere in the car. You turn around looking to identify the source, and you see that there's a homeless fellow in one of the corners. He's got a few trash bags with him filled with all sorts of odds and ends. And, you know, within a 10-foot radius, there's nobody there. Because this guy is so rancid that if you get too close, you'll definitely throw up on the spot. What happens? You wait till the next stop, you get off the train, you go to a different car, a place where your nose can be at rest. And it bothers me. You know, I can't stand to be on the same train as this fellow who smells so bad. How does he live with himself all day long? How does he sit there in his own smell 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? How does he manage that? It's impossible. I can't even be there for 3 seconds. And the answer obviously is, he's used to it. He's been so accustomed to smelling that way that he doesn't even smell himself. It's a normal thing. Totally normal. That's us. We are smelly, homeless subway guys. We live in spiritual filth. And it doesn't bother us. Why doesn't it bother us? Why doesn't it bother me that I didn't put on tefillin today? Why doesn't it bother me that I don't daven with a minyan and I've set up my schedule in such a way that I'm not going to daven with a minyan? Why doesn't it bother me when I high-five the girl and all the examples that Yoni gave last week, which I'm not going to say them, V'day l'chakima? Why doesn't that bother me? Rabosai, it's because you stink. You smell awful, but you don't smell yourself. Now, we shouldn't think for a second, chas v'shalom, especially not in this holy yeshiva, that everybody falls into that category. Not everybody falls into that category. But you'll say, basically, rubam kikulam of the people here pick and choose to some degree. I'm not doing everything right now, so am I not in this category of the pickers and choosers, of the people who are looking to dictate to religion instead of having the religion dictate to them? So the answer is no. You're not necessarily in that category. You can have two people who behave externally exactly the same way. Neither one of them is practicing 100% according to what the Shulchan Aruch demands of him. But on the inside, there are two totally different people. You can have one person who picks and chooses the way we discussed up until now. He picks and chooses what's good for him, and what doesn't make sense, what doesn't fit with his lifestyle, and he ignores it. We'll call him person A. But then you have person B. Person B has made a fundamental commitment. I am an Eved Hashem. I want to do what the Torah wants. But what? I can't do it all at once. That's impossible. You know, Chaim Volozhin gives a mashal in the Ruach Chaim, Pirkei Avos. It's quoted by the Imud Eish. Reb Chaim Volozhin gives a mashal to a king who tells his servant, you know, there's some work that needs to be done on the roof. I want you to go up to the roof and take care of the job. So, the guy starts walking up the steps to get to the roof. Could you imagine a king who sees his servant go to start walking up the steps and says to the guy, hey, you know how long it's going to take you to get to the roof if you use the steps? I want you to jump to the roof. You'll get there right away. That's absurd. No king would say such a thing. Obviously, lot, one step at a time. You have to take it slow. I go up this step, and then go to the next step. But if my goal is to get to the roof, the king is happy. Very happy. But if the king tells me that I should go take care of the job on the roof, and I say, well, I can't jump to the roof, and steps are, you know, it makes my legs tired. I'm just going to sit down and rest. The king sees it, then the king's going to get upset. Person A and person B behave exactly the same way. Person A is a picker and chooser. According to the Beis Halevi, person A is an Oved Avodah Zarah. You're worshiping yourself instead of Hashem. And person B is the quintessential Eved Hashem, climbing the steps one by one. And sometimes we have a tendency to excuse any behavior that may not exactly be in line with the Torah wants by claiming to be person B. Rabbi, would you just take it easy? You're the one who always says, lot. I'm just doing it lot, Rabbi. This is the, you know, I need to grow into it. And the guy says this, and sometimes he fools the Rebbe into thinking it's true. He's really person A, but he fools the Rebbe into thinking he's person B. Sometimes he'll fool his Rebbeim, but he won't fool his friends. Sometimes he'll fool his Rebbeim and his friends. Sometimes he'll fool his Rebbeim and his friends, but he won't fool himself. And sometimes he fools his Rebbeim, although mostly he doesn't, because we know. He fools his Rebbeim, and he fools his friends, and he even fools himself into thinking that he's in the category of the guy who's climbing the stairs when he's really doing avodah zarah. So if he's fooling himself, how's he going to figure it out? How's he going to know? What's the litmus test? How am I going to know if I'm okay? How am I going to tell if I'm climbing the steps? Or how am I going to know if I'm just making excuses? What's the difference between these two guys? So I think that the litmus test is Mesiras Nefesh. Am I ever uncomfortable? Am I ever uncomfortable? I'll give you an example. I think of the Shana Aleph guys here, probably in one shir or another that I give, whether it's the afternoon or the night or the 3 o'clock or the Musar or the pre-chakras. I think I have between 50 and 60 guys, so it's not speaking about anybody specifically. But the following excuses have been presented to me over the course of this year and other years. This is a night seder example, but it's not unique to this year. It's time for night seder. Well, do I feel like night seder right now? Or maybe I feel like a movie. Star Wars. New Star Wars. How can I miss the new Star Wars? Rabbi, do you know where I'm coming from? I watch all the Star Wars movies on the day they come out. What do you mean I should come to night seder instead of watching Star Wars? Guys watching, I have to watch my TV shows. So if I already saw all the TV shows of this generation, so obviously, instead of coming to Afternoon Seder, I have to watch all the seasons, every episode of Fresh Prince from the 90s, because I want to be the white man. That's okay. I'm doing it my way. Lot. Rabbi, you don't understand. Why didn't I make it today to Afternoon Seder? Do you know that I sneezed yesterday? Do you know that I sneezed? I gotta rest up. My grandfather was a doctor. And I sneezed. I gotta rest up. Okay, the next day, it's D2 championship, you know. He's out there. Like, wow, miraculous recovery. Not specifically this, I'm just, you know, throwing out an example. Miraculous recovery! Oh, great, for sure, today you'll be in Seder. Rabbi, I'm dehydrated. D2. Dehydrated. It's like, what do you want? Rabbi, my grandfather's a doctor, don't you remember? Friday football, you know, Friday. It's that football thing that everybody freaks does. So you got Friday football, he's out there again! You know, with the flags and everything. Next week he's not in Seder for a whole week. Rabbi, you don't understand. Last week I sneezed, I got dehydrated, and then after football I stuck my toe. What do you want from me? This is craziness. You know, this is it. If that's you, Rabosai, don't fool yourself into thinking you're climbing the steps. If it's never a little bit uncomfortable for you, you're worshiping yourself. The litmus test is, what am I willing to sacrifice? What am I willing to give up for what's really important? If the answer is nothing, I do what makes me happy all the time. Night Seder can be very entertaining. So I go when it suits me. But sometimes Star Wars, which invests $50 million into a movie, is even more entertaining than Night Seder, which invests a little bit less than that into the Night Seder. I'm going to end off with two Rambams. Maybe I'll say a joke in the middle. The Rambam says like this, Hilchos Talmud Torah, famous Rambam, Perek Gimel, Hilchos Beis. Last year I gave a geshmak shmuz about this, actually. This water is making me thirsty. I end Shabbos. So the Rambam says like this, Ein divrei Torah miskaimin b'mishem marpe atzmo alehem. Divrei Torah are not going to last on a guy who's chilling out with the Torah. He gets a couple of pillows, right? He's got the chair across the table, takes off his shoes, puts up his feet, max cake to the right, cup of milk to the left, iPhone in the middle, ready to go. Not gonna go, boys. Who does Torah come to? Who lasts with the Torah? Torah lasts with somebody who sacrifices for it. With somebody who's willing to put himself into a little bit of an uncomfortable situation for the Torah. If I commit to this minyan, I'm not going to be able to take that Sunday morning job. So, Nu, where are your priorities? V'lo yiten sheina le'enov u'afapav tnuma. I'm tired. Rabbi, it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm tired. I've been up the whole morning. Okay, it's not time to take a 3-hour nap. Okay, fine, etc. etc. That's one Ramban. Then there's another Ramban. The next Ramban, Halacha Yud Gimel, says the Ramban, even though there's a mitzvah to learn day and night, person learns the majority of his Torah at night. Famous question. Quantitatively speaking, that can't be true. You know, a person, let's say, there's 12 hours of day and 12 hours of night. If I were to spend every waking minute engaged in Talmud Torah, so that'd be 12 daytime hours. Nighttime, I'm not going to stay up for 24 hours a day. Obviously, if I'm going to sleep, it's going to be at night. So let's say I sleep 5 hours at night, 6 hours at night. So you're left with 6 hours of learning at night and 12 hours of learning a day. It just doesn't add up. What does the Rambam mean that the majority of Torah is learned at night? So Rosai, based on what we just said, and it fits into the context of the previous Rambam also, but I skipped just for the sake of time. A person learns most of his Torah at night because nighttime is when everything's going on. Nighttime is when everyone's going out. Nighttime is when the movies are showing. Nighttime is when Monday nights, the other thing going on. There's all sorts of things that are pulling me out at night. A person who says, you know what, it's a little bit hard for me to be there at night. So the commitment of coming at night qualitatively outweighs the commitment of coming during the day. It shows that even in the meantime, even the quote-unquote personal luxury downtime, so this is where my priorities are. This is where I'm climbing the steps. I'm not a picker and chooser. I'm not an Ovid of Avodah Zarah. I'm climbing the steps. So Amir Tashem Rabosai, we should all be Zocha. We're halfway through the year. Make yourselves uncomfortable.
Very warm. Put me on my jacket.